Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.
All right, you're very welcome along to this week's Friday Night Racing. Our guest this week is Warren O'Connor, who is a jockey's coach, and we're also joined by Tom Malone. So we've got the A-team out this week, lads. How are you doing?
Thanks, Thatcher.
Thanks, sir.
Now, you guys know each other a little bit?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah, so you're a jockey's coach now. Obviously, we'll talk about your career as a jockey as well. Tom was a student of yours for a little while.
He was, yes. He popped in for just for me to have a look at him and see, can I give him a few tips, you know what I mean, and pointers. And
he nearly retired after that, I heard.
Yeah, he put me two in the saddle after that.
Before a charity race, I decided that I wanted to just tidy up my style a little bit. So I rocked into Warren's, and in my head, I was already Cash Rasmussen or Steve Cawthon or Frankie Dettori. So Warren very kindly gave me a few home treats.
This is actually kind of worthwhile because, like, what do you do with the jockey when they come in? I mean, obviously, you're dealing with them. Very experienced jockeys, some novice jockeys. It's the whole kind of rainbow of everybody who comes into you. So when somebody like Tom comes into you, or when somebody who's even more experienced comes into you, what are you looking at?
Well, basically, I'm there to look at their style, look at their balance, and the most important that I'm looking for is their balance and their rhythm. You have to have both. You know what I mean? If you haven't got both, you're a hindrance to the horse underneath you. You know, you have to be balanced, and if you're not balanced, a horse is traveling at 30, 35 miles an hour. And if there's a lot of movement going on, it's like you would, if I put a school bag on top of your back and I ask you to sprint up, you'll sprint up there, not a bother. If I put a few heavy books in the back of it and these books are moving around on the back, you won't sprint up as fast. So imagine a horse doing 30 miles an hour and there's a jockey moving around, their body weight is moving on top of the horse. You know what I mean? That's not helping the horse.
So if somebody comes in and their balance isn't great, is it fixable?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. You'll always know the natural person. The natural jockey will always have it. You know what I mean? It'll always be there. But I find with a lot of anyone who comes to me, I find that the minute they come, I can see straight away with their balance, that they're not balanced. The most important thing is to be on the ball of your foot. You know, you don't see a boxer going around dancing around on his toe.
In the stirrups.
In the stirrups.
Right.
Yeah. Because that's
a tiny little strip of metal.
Yeah.
The full ball of your foot.
Yeah. You mean, it's like, you know, when I was riding, you know, I mean, my small saddle was the saddle I used all the time, you know. But the difference is to be balanced on that iron. You know, it's only a little bit.
It's tiny, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very small. It's very small. I found just, it was an absolute eye-opener. You know what I mean? You watch horse racing and you think you see a jockey, and what you want is a jockey absolutely throwing the kitchen sink at the horse.
Exactly.
And that's the big mistake everyone makes, that, like, you know, scrubbing the ears off and going as hard as he can, and that is just completely wrong. You obviously have to work with the animal. And then, like, Warren is a complete equisizer in his house, which is basically a full-size mechanical horse, and you go on that, and he gives you exercise to try and just feel the rhythm of the horse and go with it.
And how easy is it to learn that, Tom? When you were, like, so you're getting feedback on it. What is that experience like for you?
Well, it's pretty good. Like, Warren will have a camera there as well. He'll video you. He'll step up himself, which is a pretty cool as well. You've got a professional jockey showing you exactly how to do it. And you see the way he does stuff like pulling through his whip or using his stick in rhythm with the horse, which you see a jockey do. You think, that's easy. But to actually get your hands and the horse and the stick and everything just moving in concert is a bit more, not as straightforward as it looks.
Yeah, an untrained eye, sometimes I'm like, is that jockey, is he using the whip or not? It's so subtle you can't tell. Like, they're the ones that are kind of, they're reaching a level of perfection.
Yeah, there's an art to it. You know, it's like the last person to go for the whip is usually the person that wins. You will watch any of those top class jockeys, they will push. I remember Mick Kinnan, when I was riding against Mick, he'd arrive beside me and he'd literally say, you go for your stick first, you go for your stick first. And you'd be there going, not wanting to. But as soon as you've gone,
hang on,
he's got the upper hand.
Is he saying that out loud?
No, but right, you can see the expression in his face, you know, and he's, go on, go for it. He'd be looking at you, you know what I mean? He'd make you go for it.
Right.
And that's the difference. And as soon as you've gone for it, then he has that up his sleeve.
Okay, that's mad. So there's a bit of psyching out going
on. Yeah,
the most famous finishes at Leopardstown is Galileo and Fantastic Light in the Champions Stakes in about 2001, and Galileo previously beaten Fantastic Light. That's so nice, it was Mick Kinnan and Frankie Dettori coming up sides, and Mick literally moved his hands first, and Frankie said after the race was like, "That's when I knew. That's when I knew." And it's just just that, like, their jockeys are eyeballing each other. They know what they have underneath them, but they're just glancing over as well to
see. Is it purely peripheral vision, or are they literally making a point of going, "I'm looking at you now"?
It's like you're making your jockey go for the whip first. You know what I mean? As I say, if you've gone for that stick, you've no reserve left.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying? But if you haven't gone, you've a reserve there to go for that stick then. So that could be another just bob of the head, especially when you're in a tight finish. That's where you see the good jockeys. They have the confidence to do that. You know, when we're young, we turn into the straight, we see the winning post, and we just fight, as you said, kitchen sink, knives, forks, everything. We fire that, you know, and you just let go. You didn't care how you looked. There was no balance, there was no rhythm. You lost everything coming up to the line. As when you were young, you get tired, but when you get professional, it's all about being professional about it.
I think a prime example of that was Frankie Dettori on Enable in the King George when he came upside Crystal Ocean. And despite pulling out his stick early, he actually only used it on the animal once. And he just kept that rhythm, constantly just showing the stick and just keep, it's that thing Warren talks about. When you talk about it short, that just keeping the balance and the rhythm with the horse.
Yeah.
And like the two horses are head to head, the neck and neck. She was headed once. And you would think any other jockey wallops her then. But Frankie doesn't. He just keeps with the rhythm and keeps showing the stick and just knows she's going to find form. I mean, obviously, she's an exceptional horse, so it's slightly different, but...
Yeah, but that's what you mean. That's where the good jockeys come in. And even when the question you ask, when any new person comes to the simulator, you want to see them. They just try drive... Now, the simulator's bolted to the ground. They try to drive it out to get it closer to that mirror.
That.
You mean, here they are, they're using their body, heart and soul, and they're not moving it one bit. So what I try to do then is to tidy it up and put them in rhythm with it, that they're going the very same speed as the machine is going.
Balance is about centre of gravity, right?
So the
balls of your feet is very important, but everything else kind of has to come through a straight line somewhere along the way, or else you're whatever way you're crouched, you should be able to.
Yeah, it's basically you're positioning yourself on your legs. Your legs are your balance, right? And that's where your core. You need your core. Your core needs to be so strong, like. I remember I used to play squash 3 or 4 nights a week. I did a lot of running, I did a lot of power walking. But if I wasn't race riding, I was not race riding fit. And I know, from anyone who comes in to me, I know if they're fit or not fit for race riding. I'm riding work, I mean, I could ride 25 horses piece of work during the week, right? If I rode in a race tomorrow morning, my legs would give up. They'd give in. I wouldn't be fit enough. And that's been honest. You know what I mean?
Fitness-wise,
because you have to be race riding to be race riding fit.
Right. I mean, it's a bit of a catch-22. So obviously, there's parts of the season at the start of the year where jockeys aren't up to the full level of fitness. What can they do to kind of cheat that? Like,
well, it's basically as I have a lot of my young kids and amateurs, whoever I coach, I doing core work. Go on to YouTube. There's plenty of YouTube videos with core work on it, and it's your core that you need to be built up. Now, Wayne Middleton works, he's in racing, and he's very, very good with all the lads with his fitness and all like that. And he's very, very good, and the lads find him brilliant, you know. And that's what you need. You need to be working on your core. Your core is number one. You'd no point going into a gym and lifting weights and weights and weights.
Yeah.
It's not worth a damn to you. You know what I mean? When you're working your own body weight, and that's what's building up.
Were you sore after the race?
Not particularly after the race, because I didn't ride a finish. Essentially, I hunted around the back. But I was sore after having the session with Warren, because you probably ride about 5 or 6 finishes in the hour. You know, just but it's even just the difference, as Warren said.
If
you were, like, at the time, building up to the race, I was kind of doing evenings here and I was riding out in the mornings. So I was riding probably 25 horses a week, like Warren says. But, like, it's just different. You know, then you're just sitting on them, you're cantering around the gallop. You might do a couple of pieces of work quicker, but you're never getting into position where you're, like, crouching down, forcing them, changing your hands or anything, like using your stick or anything like that. It's just a completely different level. And, like, they'll give you little exercises to try and strengthen up different muscles, but really the exercise is the only real way, I would say, that you can try and find anything to replicate it.
Warren, it's a bit mad to me that your job now didn't really exist until very recently. When you think about the lengths that riders go to shave off a little bit of weight and to try and get a bit of advantage over their rivals, that they never thought that having somebody to give them, you know, just a sometimes tough love, sometimes an arm around the shoulder, whatever it is, that coaching in every sport in the world exists at a very, you know, it's getting better and better at such a rate of knots, but in racing it's only starting now, so it's kind of scratching the surface.
You know, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I was a professional jockey for nearly 20 years, right? And, you know, I've been through the good times and I've seen the bad times. You know, I've been up and I've been down, ridden big winners, small winners. I've had a lot of trouble with issues, with demons, and I came out the other side of it. But the difference is, you know what I mean, I looked at this and I said, every sports person has a coach. You mean, I know when I was
it's so simple when you say it like
simple,
that.
Well, it is a simple way of saying it. I remember when I was riding, I don't know, a lot of people mightn't remember Tommy Carmody, but by God, Tommy Carmody was one of the best riders ever, and Liam Brown, who I served my time with, would say he was the best jockey he ever had. Tommy...
Can I ask you about Liam Brown?
Yes.
Because he comes up in these conversations loads and loads and loads and loads, and he's my parents' neighbour, and I had no idea that he was such a legend.
Oh,
and like, he's one of the nicest men in the world. So I'm kind of interested because it's so.
I'm glad you said that.
But well,
he does seem to be almost like this grandfather of talent.
Johnny Martin mentioned him. Yeah. Like a bunch of people.
I promise you one thing: he was the master of jockeys. Absolutely. You mean now tough? You mean that's what I laughed when you said, gentleman. He was. To this day, I respect that man so much. You know what I mean? What he taught me. You mean it, not just the riding part of it, was how to dress, how to speak to people, how to respect people.
You were an apprentice under him, were you?
I was, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And you mean a lot of top jockeys. The reason I wanted to go to Liam was because he made the best. Mick Kinnan, Pat Gilson, Tommy Carmody, Mark Dwyer. You know, you could go on David Parnell, God forbid.
Was he a trainer?
He was a horse trainer, yeah.
Okay, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
He trained, he had about 150 horses in training, and a big trainer, trained an awful lot of winners. But his main target was making his jockeys.
Right.
Like, making apprentices. And by God, he was tough. Like, it was 7 days a week and no weekends off.
Yeah.
I knew that when I was signing that dotted line what I was signing myself in for. But I wanted it, you know, I really, really wanted it. And you mean, with the luck of God, you know, my breaks came, you know.
So in a way, I mean, maybe I phrased the whole thing wrong at the start, like, that was your coaching. It's just, it wasn't one-on-one, it wasn't kind of, you know, I mean, obviously it was one-on-one in certain instances where he would give you feedback, but it wasn't coaching per se. You had a, you know, you had a trainer-jockey relationship. What your relationship now is that it's an individual relationship with the jockeys who are coming to you in a bid to try and improve their game.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm there now, just not just to coach them, I'm there to help them out, you know, through the good and the bad. You know, the worst way, a lot of young kids, you mean, if they get a bollocking, something they can take it to heart, you know what I mean? And as I said, I don't give them a bollocking. I give them a nice bollocking, you know, that sort of way, you know what I mean? I'm not the trainer's already after giving out to them for the ride they gave them. I'll go through that race with them. Ask them first, do you see the mistakes you've made?
Yeah.
And if they don't see it, point it out to them and then try help them through it, that they're not going to do it the next day. You know what I mean? So I'm there to guide them. I'm there to help them. And you mean, the most important thing is to work, to make sure they're on a good diet, make sure they're on, if their fitness is good as well, you know, make sure that they're talking, that they're able to talk to people properly. You know, the worst thing to do is come in and insult an owner saying that their horse is no good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's like insulting their wife.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need something like that. You know, you need to be professional about it. The same turning up at the races, if you've a pair of runners on you, you know, and the owner gets out of the car with a suit on him next to with the car beside you, he's looking at you and he's saying, I'm paying him to do a job. You know what I mean? They're only little things, but that was betting to us when I served my time with Liam.
Yeah.
Races themselves, what are the most like common mistakes, say, the younger apprentices might make?
The biggest mistake is they try too hard. You know what I mean? It's like what I said, you know, when you arrive, when you turn into the straight and you see that winning post, the first thing you do is you let go. You know, riding a horse is like driving a car. There's five gears. You know, there's the push, there's a slap on the shoulder, there's the backhander, there's the forehand, and then there's the big one. But when I was young, I know what it's like. I turned into straight, seen a winner post, straight for the big one. So you've gone straight for the big one. By the time you're coming up to the line, what are you doing? Only you're getting tired and more tired.
Caught.
And getting caught on the line. And that's a gap. Look, it's
It's probably similar to any sport, you know, the white line
sport.
Fever.
Yeah,
the,
of course. You know, like, we're all young. So we need, that's why I'm there to help them, guide them, try to improve them.
So that's the younger jockeys.
Yeah.
Do the older jockeys come to you now and realise that actually there's a benefit from that?
Shane Foley, myself and Shane work together, you know what I mean? We'd be on the phone and we'd go through races and all like that. And, you know, he'd even to this day, you know, he'd say, well, what do you think? You know what I mean? Did I make a mess of it? Plus, you mean, what I'll do is the night before, I'll go through the races and I will see how my way, what I think the way that the horse should be ridden. I'll go through the form of the others. Just, it's another opportunity for him to not to be worrying about things. Then when we talk before racing, we'll talk about the race, see what this will go on, that will go on. I'd probably better off let him bowl along, make it, or probably sit in, you know what I mean? Look, you always have three or four plans up your sleeve. But he's the professional at the end of the day. As soon as those gates open, it's his professionalism that comes into play.
From the pieces that we've done over the last year as well, it seems like in the last 10 years or so, there's been a sea change in the general approach from the jockeys to, maybe it's even a bit longer, and Adrian McGolder clearly had a part in this, and like talking to them about nutrition and making sure they were doing their fitness and making sure that they were all thinking about the issues of concussion. It seems like racing modernised in a way that other sports modernised. You know, you remember Arsene Wenger comes to the Premier League and suddenly... Yeah.
They're not drinking until Wednesday. Everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, the diets change and then that explodes because everybody realises there was an advantage. And it seems like racing is kind of undergoing that at the minute. Even talking to some jockeys now who are like, oh yeah, you know, I had two gummy bears and a can of Red Bull for the last 36 hours. You're like, well, there's probably a better way of doing that nowadays. They might be able to give you, you know, a little bit of morsel of food here.
It's gotten more professional now. You know what I mean? It really has. But it's about time. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, look, when I was riding, I was riding on adrenaline. That was basically it. That's what
did you have proper struggle with your weight?
Oh yeah, like you mean I'd be naturally 10 over 10, 10-2 now, and I used to be walking around eight stone three.
it's ridiculous.
So it was crazy. Like I was riding 2 stone underneath my natural weight, you know. And people say to me, "Where did I get the strength from?" I'd be honest with you. Once adrenaline pumped in, that's where strength comes from. I'd gone to stage. I couldn't even take the top off a bottle of Lucid. And that's the way my strength had gone completely. But once race day came, if I was on a ride that could win, the adrenaline pumped in.
Is that where the demons come from?
Well, demons came. Look, I had a lot of problem with alcohol, drug addiction. I was bulimia for 15 years.
Do you think that you would have had those problems if you weren't a jockey, or do you think that the life of the jockey was something that triggers them?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I was overdriven from a young age. I mean, I started dieting when I was 9 years of age.
Right.
Started drinking black tea. I mean, you ask me anything about Lester Pickett, I could tell you everything about him. You know what I mean? He was born the 5th of November, 1935. You know, I eat and slept. Well, I didn't eat. And then, you know, it took over my life.
From the time you were 9, you decided you wanted
to
be Lester Pickett.
Yeah, oh geez, yeah. Like, my mother always said, from the time I left school, usually, people, you know, when the child would say mammy or daddy, and say my first word was jockey. You know, that sort of way, you know. It's just all I wanted. And I was just overdriven. I wanted to be the best. I remember I had a treble one day at the Curra. There was a group race, a premier handicap, and another group race. I got beaten in another race, and I went home and I played the video over of the race I got beaten, and I never enjoyed
it. By the way, treble at the Curra for any job, like,
I know,
it's such a, it's so worth celebrating. But
it's madness. So, you know, I mean, Richard Dunwoody, a great friend of mine, AP, you know what I mean? They'll tell you about it. Once you're driven, you'll do anything. You know,
they would have similar mentalities, though, wouldn't they?
Yeah. The only thing is, they went the right way about it. I went the wrong way. But you know, that's, look, what happened has happened. You know, I've turned my life around. And that's the most important thing.
It's
come out the other side.
It's a great position to be in, to be able to have a meaningful conversation with kids who want to become jockeys. That there's a value to being a jockey, but there's a bigger value in looking after yourself. And that you'll be a better jockey in the long run.
Yeah.
You'll have more longevity if you can look after yourself properly. And you know, I think that if someone like AP is having that conversation with young jockeys, it's great. But he's also AP McCoy. If you're having that conversation, having come through what you've come through, you can actually teach them that there is a different path. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, you know, look, everyone knows my story, and you know, I've even the book beside the simulator. I say, you know, if I see any problems with any of the kids that I coach, open up that. I said, do you want to go down that road? Do you understand? And I hope to God you don't. And with the look of God, you know what I mean? That's what I'm there to help them. You know, I love what I do. I absolutely love what I do. You know what I mean? I'm passionate about it. You mean, and it's great for me as well, because I'm back doing something in the sport that, you mean, I let myself down. In, you know, to me, I let myself down.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, like,
That's life. You know what I mean? But thank God, I've come out the other side.
Yeah, yeah,
it's great.
Have you made peace with the day at the Curragh where you win three and lose one?
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
Can you enjoy that treble now?
Yeah, but it's gas. You mean, I enjoy now, you mean, I didn't even enjoy going racing anymore. You know what I mean? Now I love going racing. I love seeing the kids ride, the new kids that I have, or let it be an amateur.
Warren was there at the weigh room in Punchdown and Charters, because I think a few other people had gone to you as well.
That's
and
right.
Like every single one of us give a little chat before you go out and just like, watch that first turn, it's sharper than you think it is, and just like every single person, it was like he was actually like a beaming dad there. It was gas.
The bit where you are deciding to be a jockey coach, right? Was that an obvious thing for you to do? Did you see that gap from a while back?
Well, would you believe, after being away and get myself sorted out, I'll be honest with you, I didn't know what to do. You know what I mean? I thought my life was sort of over. You know, I said, how am I going to turn this around? You know, I'm be truthful with you. With the luck of God, you know, and with the great thanks to Frank Moran and Helen O'Sullivan of the Irish Jockeys Trust, you mean, they got behind me, they asked me what would I like to do. This came up about going to England, flying over every Monday to do the BHA coaching. And the minute I seen it, put that, I said, yes, that's what I'd love. If I got that, it'd be just fantastic to be doing something that I love doing. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
You have to be good at it then, right? Because that's the other part of it. Is like, you know, it's great to love doing something, but you need to learn a completely new bunch of skills.
With Yogi Bresner now, he was absolutely, he's one of the best in the world, right? And he was one of, and Sue Ringrose, and they were just brilliant, absolutely fantastic. What I even learned doing that course alone.
Did Yogi Bresner give the course?
Yeah,
he's this, like, by the way, he's basically called like a horse whisperer. He's like Dr. Dooley. He can break horses without even lunging them. Like, he uses, like, normally when you break a horse, right, you put him on a long rein and you'd get him go around you in circles. But you have the horse on essentially leads, like lead reins, but he can do it by like clicks and voice and stuff.
He's absolute genius.
Yeah, the talents he has, like, he's literally a horse whisperer. It's phenomenal. So yeah, that must have been quite a buzz as a horseman to kind of experience him as well.
Yeah, and to get compliments off him as well. You know what I mean? Like, they turned around to Frank and Helen. They said, "Well, I tell you one thing, he's definitely got it. He says he's got the gift of the gab, and he loves what he's doing, and he's natural at it."
It's a good combination.
To hear that from a man like that was just unbelievable.
So that gets you up and running. Can I ask you this question? If you at your lowest ebb or along the way, if you'd been tapped on the shoulder by yourself now, would you have been ready to listen, do you think?
No.
Would you have benefited?
At the time, look, it took me a long time to get out of where I was. You know, it took me a long time. And a lot of issues. And, you know, I had to deal with an awful lot of issues in my own head. But the most important thing that I had to deal with is you're never going to be the best. You know what I mean? I thought in my head I was the best. The best at everything I did. If I played squash, I played tennis, I was brilliant at all sport. No matter what, whoever was in the court, I thought I was going in to beat them. I played a world champion out in Saudi Arabia, you know, in a match, and I thought I was going in there and I thought I was going to beat him in a game of squash. He had me running around in rings and I still thought I was going to beat him. You know, that was the madness in my head, you know, to get rid of all that madness, you know.
How did you eventually get rid of it?
Always a lot of good people.
Right.
A lot of good people. I have great help today. You know, I have great help today.
Is that counselling? Is that talking
to
people?
Yeah, it's counselling, talking to people. I have a good person who I talk to every day, you know what I mean? And that's the most important thing, you know what I mean? Of good people behind me. Good people.
It's funny, because again, to go back to, like, the stories of jockeys starving themselves. There's a little bit of macho in it, the way there was a little bit of macho in English football culture. These foreigners can't come over and teach us anything, and then Wenger comes and wins the league, like, whatever it was, and gets great players. And then everybody realises, actually, I need to open my mind a little bit. Was there macho in jockey? Like, if you're a top-class jockey, why would I need a coach? Why do I need somebody to analyse my stuff? I know my own. I'm the best at this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to listen to anybody.
Yeah, I remember going back over the years, even when back protectors were brought in, you know what I mean? I won't wear one of those. We won't wear one. Now, which is normal, right? They won't walk out without it. Do you understand what I'm saying? That was the macho thing. Now, it's professional. It's truly professional. Where before, people were afraid to ask for help. Where now, people do ask for help. You know what I mean? If there's problems there, people will ask for it. You know, and they'll put their foot down. And it's an organisation now where Dr. McGoldrick has done a fantastic job. You know, and before that, Dr. Halley, you know, God rest his soul, he was doing a great job for it as well. You know, but it had to be done. You know what I mean? You've got to remember, you're going out there and you're travelling 30, 35 miles an hour, and you're followed by two ambulances.
And you're starving and you're dehydrated.
Yeah, exactly.
In a lot of the cases.
I mean, I was coming out of the sauna and I could have slid underneath the door, not even opened up the door. You know what I mean? And I was going out on horses and, trying to ride. You know, I rode, don't take me wrong. But, I wasn't at the full of my health. You know, I couldn't have been. Sure, I couldn't have been 2 stone underneath your natural weight.
Yeah.
Like years ago, it was 7.77 was bottom weight, where now it's 8.4. You know, it's a big jump.
We talk about this a good bit. Like, what's going to happen? Because the weights are unsustainable. The whole of the racing world needs to have, like, a massive coming together and say, what difference does it make if the jockeys are half a stone heavier? And if they're all half a stone heavier, that's fine.
Yeah, but the only thing is then it brings in, I know this is where the problem is, it brings in the National Hunt jockeys into the flat game.
Yeah.
Do you get my meaning? And I know, it's flat and National Hunt. There are two differences. If you up the weights too much, the jump lads are going to be able to ride in the flat. So then it's going to be just jockeys.
It makes it smaller.
It won't be flat and National Hunt. So you have to have, there has to be some sort of, now I understand, look at the generations. I see 15-year-olds going to school now and be, Lord, God forbid, they're bigger than me and bigger than us here.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And they look so old. But I still agree there has to be flat and National Hunt. Definitely.
Yeah. Is there a cut-off point where that, like, do the weights need to rise a little bit?
Definitely.
For jockey safety.
Yeah.
The bottom weights and handicaps, they probably need to go up maybe a shade, maybe 8.8 or something.
Yeah, 8.7. If you went to 8.7, you'd be comfortable enough at that. You know what I mean? But I wouldn't be going any heavier. I wouldn't be going any heavier than that. You know, you have to, as I say, you have to have the flat and you have to have the National Hunt.
There is still a weight for age scale that's worked, I don't want to sound like a Luddite, but that it has worked in horse racing for 150 years. And there's still a handicapping system that has worked quite well for equally amount of time. So, you know, you still have to kind of give those horses a chance as well, right down the bottom of the weights. And the other thing is, it actually gives certain jockeys chances. Like a guy, the guy that you worked with, of course, Robbie Dolan, who's down in Australia at the moment.
Yeah.
He's a champion apprentice down there and he weighs 47 kilos. I'm not even sure what that is in metric, but it's basically, if you think about a rugby player, it's half, not even half a rugby player.
Yeah.
He's 47 kilos,
but he's healthy.
So there has to be, so many of these lighter jockeys have to have opportunities too. And, the only time some of these guys get rides on the bigger days is down the bottom of the weights in these premier handicaps and the like. So, there are still small people around and they kind of need to be given
like
the opportunity.
Wayne Lord, look at Wayne Lorden. Wayne Lorden is 8 stone nothing, you know what I mean? And he's that size. So, the weights will have to rise, but I'm not on about rising them too much now, let's be honest.
Okay, fair enough.
And
with all your experience. Text in here wondering, do you try and improve the style that the jockey already has, or do you try and teach a certain style which you think is the most efficient? So what's your teaching philosophy?
When I look at the jockey, I look at their size, and then I will sort of I'll try adapt them. First of all, I'll ask them who's their favourite jockey. If they've something same build as Tom there, and Tom is their favourite jockey, we'll get them to look like Tom. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's all about the size of them, what way they're built, and then I will try adapt them to ride like someone like Shane Foley.
So you're not going to take, all my jockeys are going to look exactly the same.
Oh, no.
Everybody's
no.
going to know that this is one of my pupils.
Luckily I said Richard Hughes.
There's Richard, like, big tall fella, and yeah. I tell you, absolutely fantastic jockey, absolutely one of the best. Now, if I have a tall lad who comes into me, I'll adapt him, try to adapt on his style, you know.
Warren, let's go back to the your career as a jockey, because it would be easy for us to kind of just talk about what you're doing now, but actually you had a great career as a jockey. You were a professional for 20 years, despite the fact that you were battling the demons that you talked about. And you must be, when you look back on that, you must be incredibly proud of the fact that you, because it sounds to me like there's a bit of tension between the I didn't fulfil my potential and the, actually, while I had all that stuff going on, I was still pretty good.
Yeah, like, it's, you know, when I look back at it, I mean, I've broken every bone in my body through injuries. I was the most, as the lads would say, I was the most unluckiest fat jockey in the world, because every time I fall, every time I got a fall, something broke. But even, you know, I was champion apprentice, and to be champion apprentice in Ireland, you know, was just, you know, fantastic. Absolute. Johnny Murtagh always reminds a lot of people with that. Warren O'Connor beat me, you know. So, and, you know, I'd ridden over 500 winners. To ride a Classic winner, to ride a Royal Ascot winner, to ride in a Breeders' Cup. I've ridden winners all over the world. In Dubai, I won Bombay Guineas, Bangalore Guineas. I've won the Corley Clips.
How do you get booked for the Bombay and Bangalore Guineas? How does that happen?
It's
if a phone call comes in with a long delay in the line.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, well, you think you've been hacked into, you're all right. No, it's like years ago. You see, there was no racing during the winter.
Right.
So what we used to do is, once November came, we'd go out foreign then from November to March. And I was out in India, I've been in Saudi Arabia, I've been in Dubai, Australia, America, Japan.
Now, was this having crack?
No, working.
But, like, as well, having crack?
Yeah, I'm working sort of a holiday as well.
Right.
A bit of both. But, you know, the racing was serious out there.
Right, okay.
Absolute serious,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you got good retainers to go out there.
So
know?
An agent would come over and book the best Irish jockeys to go to Australia or America.
Well,
or
it's like anything. There's the Irish are known all over the world, and especially as jockeys. And in India, all they want is the Irish jockeys. They want to get the Irish jockeys over there. I mean, Christy Roach, Mick Kinnan, they've all been out there. David Parnell. David Parnell's father started off out there, you know what I mean? And it's been going on for just years and years and years. And just every year there's been jockeys going out.
And is it an amazing life experience?
Oh, it's brilliant. Absolute fantastic. And, like, I mean, the likes of these places, you know, for me to be able to say I've travelled all around the world, you know, and this was at the age of 21, 22 years of age.
Yeah.
You know, that was wow.
Nobody has gone to India in the 70s.
Yeah, you know what
90s.
I mean? It's unbelievable, you know, for a little fellow, a little boy from Wexford, you know what I mean? To get to where I got, you know, I have to remember it. Yeah, it's been brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant, you know.
So you've made peace with that, because, like, the life experience is incredible. Maybe you didn't fulfil your potential. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I always wanted to be champion jockey. You know, I was champion apprentice. I was third or fourth in the championship here. Always wanted to be champion. But as I said, the demons crept in, and it as the years went on, it got worse and worse.
Can we just point out something as well? Like, the quality of rider that Warren is riding against. So, like, when you won the Guineas on Cayuga, that was your first ride in a Classic.
First ride in a Classic,
in 1991.
Yeah.
So I watched this race earlier, actually. So the other riders, Lester Pickett, Willie Carson, Steve Cawthon, Christy Roach, Kevin Manning, Johnny Murtagh. And then when she went and won the Eclipse, like, you're riding against Mick Kinnan, the Hills brothers. Like, the best jockeys, like, collectively as a group, I would say, and Frankie Dettori would have been breaking through around about that time as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So, you know, you're not talking, like, just go and say, oh, well, I want to be champion. Like, the depth of quality in Irish racing in particular at the time, so you would have had, like I said, came through similar enough time to Johnny Murtagh, Mick Kinnan, Christy Roach, Lester was riding over here plenty of the
That's
time
right,
as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So, you know, to get to third in the jockey table, they're not really going to let Warren beat himself up over that, because it was phenomenal level of talent in the saddle. Cayuga, what a filly she was.
Oh, she was brilliant. She was absolutely, and that was from day one, from the first day I sat in her. I always said, I mean, when I joined Michael Kant's, it was the best 5 years that I had in race, and you could say, the first morning I sat in her, I knew she was something special. Yeah. Absolutely. She was just a pure machine. You know what I mean? You'll always know that the one that has that gears, you know.
I just looked at the 92 eclipse. She went off at 7-2, like a filly in the eclipse that just doesn't really happen. I just watched the race back. Like, you rode her incredibly confidently, as the saying would say. You gave the outside to no one.
Yeah, well, there's what you're on about confidence. You know, I'd lost the Prince of Wales in Ascot. I hadn't ridden the winner for 6 weeks.
They just always remember the losers, don't they?
The pressure that was on us, that even on Michael, you know what I mean? And the owner stood by me and I kept the rides. And I remember we walked the track and it was the first time in 5 years that Michael Hans gave me instructions. In 5 years. He says, right, we've walked the track second or third, be second or third throughout the race. So I was grand. Okay, boss, grand, not a bother.
Were you a bit surprised that he suddenly is
doing I was a bit shocked, you know what I mean? Ooh, jeez. But I understood, because I was after losing the Prince of Wales. I hadn't ridden a winner for 6 weeks, you know what I mean? So the pressure was on him as well to stand by me to keep the ride. So the next one, he jumped out of the stalls and I said, these are going too fast. So I pulled it right back. I was last turned into straight.
Right.
Last turn into straight. And I'd say you were six wide off the bend, which would not be the ideal tactic because the ground was so cut off. Went to the near side rail.
And
you kind of came wide, obviously avoiding the cut up ground. But like on first glance, I was like, oh, this thing must be a machine. But she came and won.
So tell me the rest of the race then, because you clearly remember it.
Oh yeah, it was all when was going to press the button.
Grant. Yeah. So let's just go back. You're given these instructions. Everybody massive ramped up pressure, and you decide straight at the start, screw the instructions, and you're quite wide. So how are you? Are you thinking?
Well, if I'd have got beaten that, I would not have gone back to the brave.
That's exactly my question. I was like, no,
and
no.
It just kept going.
There's no way he has that negativity in his head, but it clearly was. It was like a quick flash going, uh-oh, this better win.
You mean, that's what I was saying about Shane Foley earlier on. When those gates open, you're the professional. You know, you take the ball into your own court. That's what you're getting paid for. You're getting paid. That's why if you have a good team working with you, you won't make mistakes. I promise you.
So the rest of the race, when do you hit the front,
when Mouse Roberts went left, I was a little bit worried because they said, oh, you know, where am I going? I'm not going to follow him, I'm not going to go out that far. So I just kept beside him, kept glancing at everything else and just picking him off one by one. It was when I was going to go to the front then.
And so what's that feeling like at the end?
The buzz was just, it was one of the best rides I've ever given a horse. You know, and to know that myself, you know what I mean? To take the ball into my own court and to say, right, I'm the professional here. And thank God, you know, it worked out, you know.
It was an absolute peach. I mean, just like she'd gone and like she was an incredible horse. She'd won the Guineas, won a Matron, won a Coronation. But then what happened in her 4 years? So she'd gone and gotten beaten then at Royal Ascot and was coming into that under.
Yeah, she'd won a Group One in Germany in Munich, and she'd won the Prince of Wales and lost it in the Stewards. But she shouldn't have lost. But look at that, Snyder here and her there. It's one of those things. I had to accept that she lost it. You know. But she was just
that level of pressure coming in and they're making that move. Just, I don't know.
Warren, the point earlier on about like you have to accept that you're not going to be the best, that's a very difficult accommodation to make for somebody who has been driven to a point of greatness. Like, there's nothing wrong with ambition either. So how do you marry these two things?
Yeah, it's like, look, it's like life. There's a balance in life, you know. It's like any person I coach now, you know what I mean? When I see them in bad form, I'll discuss it with them, you know what I mean? If I see other problems, I'll point them in the right direction. But the one thing is, you have to enjoy life as well. Life is out there to be enjoyed, you know. It's not all work. To me, as a kid, everything was just drilled to be worked. I was tuned to work. There was no going out, there was no nothing. I didn't start drinking, I was 22 years of age. should have started younger. I made up for last time, yeah. But the only thing is, that was my journey. You know, now it's to help these kids to keep on a balance in life. You need a balance in life. You need a good side and you need to balance it up. You know what I mean? It's not all work, work, work. It's not all play, play, play.
Enjoy the triumphs when they come, but
exactly,
don't get too destroyed by the losses.
Yeah.
It's one of the things about horse racing, I suppose, like, you lose a lot of the time. Majority of the time you lose. I mean, 90% of the time you lose.
One thing about racing, well. I tell you one thing, you're never up there because, you'll be down there
the next race. Like, the next race is coming in.
You're only good as your last winner. Yeah. Simple as.
All right, Friday Night Racing is brought to you by GoRacing.ie. Our guest this week is Warren O'Connor. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back looking at the weekend's racing after these.
Off the ball. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Yeah, our guest this week on Friday Night Racing is now the jockey coach, Warren O'Connor. Of course, a great jockey in his time. And you can follow you on Twitter at Jockey Coach. Good Twitter handle.
Thank you.
A lot of people don't get good Twitter handles. That's the perfect one for you. Tom, racing this weekend in Ireland, Cork and Tremore. I guess the big race in Europe is in France, though.
Yeah, the pre-morning, the second two-year-old Group 1, the Aidan O'Brien train to Arizona, a real chance to sort of follow up there. You might expect him to do so, but it's a really deep race, and Ayer is a right good chance as well. But by the sounds of things coming out of Ballydoyle, they're quite happy with Arizona's progress so far.
How good is Arizona?
I think he's very good, but I'm not sure he's their best two-year-old. Iberia, who won on debut, is very good. Have a few others. I think Pinatubo is the best two-year-old we've seen this year. It was a really impressive winner at Glorious Good of the Richmond Stakes. That impressed the Tyne boys as well, which is always crucial because sometimes you get stated, if a horse goes and wins seven lengths, the people who like the stopwatch people are getting a bit snotty.
You're obviously not one of those Tyne boys. I can see from the way you're
describing. I trust my eyes. But I do always keep an eye on the stopwatch as well. But Pinatubo is probably put in the best two-year-old so far this season. Arizona's very, very good. Look, we're into August and the start of September, and that's when the real Aidan O'Brien two-year-old big guns start to roll. Siskin's obviously the best two-year-old we've seen in Ireland so far this year for Geraldine's. Good to see him get his Group 1 winner last week. But I would say the best of the Ballydoyle talent is probably still to come.
Okay, and some announcements this week as well about the Champions Weekend?
Yeah, Long Junior Champions Weekend looks like it's going to be absolutely cracking. The first Japanese runner in Ireland will be Deirdre. Funny name for a horse, isn't it? But anyway, she's an absolute superstar in Japan. She won at Glorious Goodwood. She's going to come for the Kipco Champion Stakes. Mad Moon for Kevin Prendergast, of course, was second in the Derby. Was so unlucky in the Derby. He won over a mile last night in Leopardstown. That was his prep for the Champion Stakes. So Dragon, it was fifth in the Derby. He's going to run at the Curragh tonight. So if you're listening on radio, maybe he's already won. But that's his prep race. Look, he's 1-2 at the time. So Dragon. So look, it's shaping up to a really nice race. Got the likes of Magical in there as well. And then we'll see what the British contingent is. But look, Longines Irish Champions again. That's going up on the 15th and 16th of September. Looking forward as well. Of course, I always give a shout out to Sophie as well. She steps up to Group 1 class for the first time in the Flying Five. So Ireland's first 5-furlong sprint was run last year for the first time, so keep an eye out for her. Good to see Fast Eddie have another sprinter.
Did I see on Instagram as well that Jeske retired this week?
Yeah. What a horse. I mean, you'd be much closer to you down there riding work. Yeah. But
He's been brilliant at the yard. Absolute brilliant. He's a right horse. Absolutely. It's great. It's great now that he's gone out in one piece. You know.
How long have you been with Jessica Harrington?
I've rode a lot of winners for Jesse, and we've been riding work for now for what? Oof, jeepers. 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're riding out every day as well as coaching?
Just 2 mornings a week.
Okay. That would coincide with her increased flat, success in the last couple of years.
The last couple of years have just been fantastic. You know what I mean? Having the filly last year, Alpha Centauri.
She was just
a machine, another machine. You know
but like,
I mean?
She is the second most amount of two-year-old winners this year, the most amount of two-year-old fillies winners. Some really impressive, including that half-sister to Alpha Centauri who won at Galway.
She's a good filly.
Any other ones we should be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah, I was disappointed with Windracer the last time. She ran too bad to be true. So, okay. You know what I mean? Please God, the fact something wrong with her, you know what I mean? She's good. She's a very, very good filly. Some nice calls still to come out.
There seems to be a lot of depth and talent. Jessica Harrington and her crew have been pretty active at the yearling sales over the last couple of years, so it's good to see that come to fruition.
Great. And she's an absolute lady to work for.
When you're watching racing, are you as in-depth on the form of each individual horse, or are you actually just kind of now at this stage of your career looking at the jockeys and how they're doing and seeing like what?
Well, it's basically more the jockeys now that I look at it. It's gas. When I ride work for Jesse, the lads would say, you're riding this, you're riding that. And the first thing I say is, what's that boy? You know what I mean? All I want to do is know their pedigree.
Yeah.
I don't want to know their names to them. I want to know their pedigree. Because when you know the pedigree, it gives you a better idea.
You know, you've seen the bloodline
Know sort of what trip you're sitting on, you know what I mean? What trip they'll want and all that. Rather than just a name, this is, you know, blah, blah, blah.
They say an ounce of pedigree is worth more than a ton of feeding.
That's true. It's true.
The Tote Irish Injured Jockeys charity was topped up by another €440 last week after a cracking name landed the spoils at Tipperary last weekend. The fund now stands at €6,959, which is pretty good. The August Festival takes centre stage in Ireland this weekend, with racing at the Tramore track both Saturday and Sunday. There's also action coming from Cork tomorrow afternoon, where the Listed Platinum Stakes is the highlight on an 8-race card. Tote customers, remember, can enjoy free racecourse tickets to select meetings throughout the year. See the tote.com for more details. And I think your best bet this week comes from Cork.
Yeah, my best bet comes from Cork. Quick mention on Tramore, by the way. They've done amazing work down there. Owen Byrne, he used to be in charge of the marketing action for Longitudinal Irish Champions Weekend. He's taken over as manager down there, and they've done amazing things. And they've been rewarded as well. Their New Year's Day chase has been upgraded from Listed to Grade 3, so that's a massive fillip for them. But if you look at Tramore and you think, like, traditionally wouldn't be the most obvious place in the world, but there are three Cheltenham winners there in the last three seasons: Album Photo, Penhill and Larina. So,
right, it's good to suddenly see somebody else looking at opportunities as stepping stones. But explain why that's a big deal on New Year's Day. What difference did that make?
Higher quality of race. It was a Listed race, and now it's been upgraded to Grade 3. It was won last year by Album Photo, who went on to win the Gold Cup. So that's always, there's kind of a circular thing here where, well, a good horse goes and win it, that means the race is technically better. You know, which is which, I don't know.
Rising tide. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, look, it's great for Tramore to have a Grade 3 chase at a time of the year when there's a lot of racing on, and, you know, you would imagine people would use it as an opportunity to perhaps, you know, sidestep Leopardstown, get a good prep into a horse, and looking at maybe the Dublin Racing Festival or Cheltenham down the line.
Okay, so what's your bet this week?
And my best bet of the week is at Cork in the 3.10s, a horse called Sonalia for Mick Halford in the 3.10. His horses are flying at the moment. Nice filly called Redenza won last night, but Sonalia, so dropped £3, dropped in class, back against fillies. She's a good chance in the 3.10. Shout out as well to Tarnawa in the feature Give Thanks Stakes.
Okay, what odds do you expect for your tip?
I hope she'd be, I mean, I'm just hoping here, but I don't know. I don't think she'd be favourite, but she's very strong form.
Okay.
I take 7-2.
That's how that works, isn't it?
yeah, absolutely.
You name a price and the bookies match it.
You just
there
say,
we go.
Yeah,
that's how that
cool.
works. Yeah, it's like a bidding system.
Yeah.
Another question for you. Who's the most technically perfect technique that you've seen, the most graceful, the Roger Federer of jockeys?
Oh, well, so like, it has to be Frankie.
Right.
Yeah. He's phenomenal. Absolute phenomenal. And would you believe he's riding better now than he even was when he was 20 years ago. You know, he's got everything. He's just got everything.
It's mad that he has the hunger to continue at this stage. Obviously, the money's great, but like...
Yeah, he's very selective these days. I mean, he doesn't do the, you know, Brighton on a Tuesday thing anymore.
Yeah, he's not travelling up and down the M25. He's not parked on the M25 all for, you know, I was in England for 3.5 years. My God almighty, the driving and the travelling over there is unbelievable, you know. But he's being select about it, but he's loving it. You know, he loves the glory, he loves the joy, and the horses he's riding now, sure, that would keep you going for another 5 years, you know.
Any particular rides this season have stood out for you by him?
Jeepers. He's just been brilliant on them all. I promise you, he doesn't make mistakes.
I thought his two rides on Stradivarius, like, they're so contrasting, the two of them were just, like... Ruby was talking last night, there was a young girl, I can't remember her name, I think Harriet Dunstan, I think her name was, but she won the bumper last night in Tramore, and she obviously doesn't have the best technique, but Ruby was talking in Racing UK going, but tactically she's gotten it spot on, and that's a far bigger aspect of jockeyship than being able to ride a finish, because with two front runners, she let them go on, cut each other's throats, and then picked up the pieces. You know, Ruby was very complimentary in that obviously she wasn't stylish in a finish because she's a young rider, she'll improve, but like,
that's teachable.
Tactically, she was far more astute than the other two.
I'll tell you what wins a lot of races is your brain. Yeah. You know, it's the brain that wins races.
When people talk about Ruby Walsh, they talk about like this internal clock that he has about pacing, that, you know, you wouldn't actually see him change the pace. Now, I don't know if it's true or not, or if it's just the way that it's the easiest way to describe it to non-racing experts, but is that something you've noticed, is that there are certain jockeys who, I guess flat's completely different because you do have to hit the button sometimes. And
yeah, no, well, in the flat you need a clock. You need, like, I promise you, you mean, when I rode in Germany, and I'd say over half the winners I rode in Germany was from the front because I was controlling the race. controlling the clock. And you need a clock in your head. It's a clock that wins races.
American jockeys in particular are noted for being able to ride sectional times to almost, you know, tenths of a second. And they, to the point that they're asked to do it, aren't
oh,
they?
Yeah. Well, then the difference in America is you wouldn't be counting the seconds coming down the hill in Clonmel.
I'm going down here 10 seconds before, like, yeah, me Barney.
You know what I mean? It's different on the flat.
It's all level.
It's all level. But what I mean is knowing the pace you're going. That's, you know, knowing what's underneath and the pace it can go.
Yeah.
Simple as that. It's
okay.
Like driving a carriage. You're not driving the
Well, Aaron, it's been fascinating stuff for the last hour. Thanks a million for being so generous with your time, and best of luck with the rest of the year as well. Tom, good stuff too. Here's hoping that we have a winner this week.
Hopefully.
No pressure. That's another Friday Night Racing in the books for you this week. If you were listening on the radio, then stay tuned. More good stuff coming your way in just a couple of minutes' time. But if you're streaming with us this morning on Facebook, YouTube, or indeed on offtheball.com, then the best place to get this is generally offtheball.com. And of course, you can also listen on OTB Sports Radio. Just tell your Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio on TuneIn, and lo and behold, magic in your earballs. We'll see you next week. Thanks very much. Good luck.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.